I don't need a disguise, Kaladin said. You spent time with those Parshmen earlier in the month, Shallan said. Best to be safe. Besides, you scowl at everyone like an old man anyway. You'll be a great fit. Kaladin glowered at her. Perfect. Keep it up. Shallan stepped over and breathed out, and stormlight wreathed him. He felt he should be able to take it in, use it, but it resisted him. It was a strange sensation, as if he'd found a glowing coal that gave off no heat. The stormlight vanished, and he held up a hand which now appeared wizened. His uniform coat had been changed to a homespun brown jacket. He touched his face, but didn't feel anything different. Adolin pointed at him. Shallan, that is positively wretched. I'm impressed.
What?
Kaladin looked at his men. Drahi winced. Shallan wrapped Adolin in light. He resolved into a sturdy, handsome man in his 60s with dark brown skin, white hair, and a lean figure. His clothing was no longer ornate, but in good repair. He looked like the kind of old rogue you'd find in a pub, with handy tales about the brilliant things he'd done in his youth. The kind of man that made women think they preferred older men, when in reality they just preferred him.
Oh, now that's unfair,
Kaladin said. If I stretch a lie too far, people are more likely to be suspicious, Shallan said lightly, then stepped over to the king. Your Majesty, you're going to be a woman. Fine, Elokar said. Kaladin started. He'd have expected an objection. Judging by the way that Shallan seemed to stifle a quip, she'd been expecting one too. You see, she said instead, I don't think you can keep from carrying yourself like a king, so I figure that if you look like a high-born, light-eyed woman, it's less likely that you'll be memorable to the guards who... I said it was fine, Lightweaver, Elokar said. We mustn't waste time. My city and nation are in peril. Shallan breathed out again, and the king was transfigured into a tall, stately, Alethi woman, with features reminiscent of Yasna's. Kaladin nodded appreciatively. Shallan was right. There was something about the way Elokar held himself that bespoke nobility. This was an excellent way to deflect people who might wonder who he was. As they gathered their packs, Syl zipped into the enclosure. She took the shape of a young woman and flitted up to Kaladin, then stepped back in the air, aghast.
Oh,
she said.
Wow.
Kaladin glared at Shallan.
What did you do to me?
Oh, don't be that way, she said. This will only highlight your excellent personality. Don't let her get to you, Kaladin thought. She wants to get to you. He hefted his pack. It didn't matter what he looked like. It was only an illusion. But what had she done? He led the way out of their enclosure, and they fell into a line. The rock illusion melted away behind them. Kaladin's men had brought generic blue uniforms with no insignias. They could have belonged to any minor house guard within the Kolin princedom. Shallan's two had on generic brown uniforms, and with Elokar wearing the dress of a light-eyed woman, they actually looked like a real refugee group. Elokar would be seen as a bright lady who had fled, without even a palanquin or carriage, before the enemy's advance. She'd brought a few guards, some servants, and Shallan as her young ward. And Kaladin was her... what? Storms.
Syl,
he growled.
Could I summon you not as a sword, but as a flat, shiny piece of metal?
A mirror? She asked, flying along beside him. Hmm.
Not sure if it's possible?
Not sure if it's dignified.
Dignified? Since when have you cared about dignity?
I'm not to be toyed with. I'm a majestic weapon to be used only in majestic ways. She hummed to herself and flitted away. Before he could call her back to complain, Elokar caught up to him.
Slow down, Captain,
the king said. Even his voice had changed to sound womanly.
You'll outpace us.
Reluctantly, Kaladin slowed. Elokar didn't show what he thought of Kaladin's face. The king kept his eyes forward. He never did think much about other people, so that was normal.
"They call it the Windrunner, you know," the king said softly.
It took Kaladin a moment to realize that Elikar was referring to the river that ran past Kolinar. Their path took them across it on a wide stone bridge.
"The Illithi Lighteyes rule because of you. Your order was prominent here in what was then Alethela." "Our quest is vital," Elikar continued. "We can't afford to let this city fall. We cannot afford mistakes."
"I assure you, Your Majesty," Kaladin said, "I don't intend to make mistakes."
Elikar glanced at him, and for a moment Kaladin felt he could see the real king. Not because the illusion was failing, but because of the way Elikar's lips tightened, his brow creased, and his gaze became so intense.
"I wasn't speaking of you, Captain," the king said quietly. "I was referring to my own limitations. When I fail this city, I want to make sure you are there to protect it."
Kaladin looked away, ashamed. Had he really just been thinking of how selfish this man was?
"Your Majesty,
no," Elikar said firmly. "This is a time to be realistic. A king must do whatever he can for the good of his people, and my judgment has proven deficient. Anything I have accomplished in life has been handed to me by my father or my uncle. You are here, Captain, to succeed when I fail. Remember that. Open the oath gate, see that my wife and child are ushered through it to safety, and return with an army to reinforce the city."
"I'll do my best, Your Majesty."
"No," Elikar said. "You'll do what I command. Be extraordinary, Captain. Nothing else will suffice."
Storms. How was it that Elikar could give a compliment and yet be insulting at the same time? Kaladin felt a weight at hearing words that reminded him of his days in Amaram's army, back when people had first started talking about him, expecting things from him. Those rumors had become a challenge, creating for everyone the notion of a man who was like Kaladin, but at the same time greater than he could ever be. He'd used that fictional man, relied upon him, to equip his team and to get soldiers transferred to his squad. Without it, he'd never have met Tara. It was useful to have a reputation, so long as it didn't crush you. The king dropped back farther into the line. They crossed the killing field under the watchful eyes of bowmen atop the wall. It made Kaladin's back itch, though they were Alethi soldiers. He tried to ignore it by focusing on studying the wall as they stepped into its shadow. "Those strata," he thought, "remind me of the tunnels in Urethiru. Could there be some connection?" He glanced over his shoulder as Adolin came up to him. The disguised prince winced as he looked at Kaladin.
"Hey,"
Adolin said.
Wow. That's really distracting."
"Storming woman."
"What do you want?"
"I've been thinking," Adolin said. "We'll want a place inside the city to hole up, right? We can't follow either of our original plans. We can't simply stride up to the palace, but we don't want to assault it either. Not until we've done a little scouting."
Kaladin nodded. He hated the prospect of spending too much time in Kolinar. None of the other bridgemen had gotten far enough to swear the second ideal, so Bridge Four would be unable to practice with their powers until he returned. At the same time, the Shadowed Palace was disquieting. They did need to spend a few days gathering intelligence.
"Agreed,"
Kaladin said.
"Do you have any ideas for where we can set up?"
"I've got just the place. Run by people I trust. And close enough to the palace to do some scouting, but far enough away not to get caught in whatever is going on there. Hopefully."
He looked concerned.
"What was it like?"
Kaladin asked.
"The thing beneath the tower that you and Shallan fought."
"Shallan has pictures. You should ask her."
I've seen them in the reports Dalinar's scribes gave me,
Kaladin said.
What was it like?
Idolin turned his blue eyes back to their path. The illusion was so real it was hard to believe it was actually him, but he did walk the same way, with that inborn confidence only a light eyes had.
It was wrong,
Adolin finally said.
Haunting. A nightmare made manifest. Kind of like my face?
Kaladin asked. Adolin glanced at him, then grinned.
Fortunately, Shallan covered it up for you with that illusion.
Kaladin found himself smiling. The way Adolin said things like that made it clear he was joking, and not only at your expense. Adolin made you want to laugh with him. They drew close to the entrance. Though dwarfed by the main city gates, the side doors were wide enough to admit a cart. Unfortunately, the entrance was blocked by soldiers and a crowd was accumulating, anger spren boiling on the ground around them. The refugees shook their fists and shouted at being barred entrance. They'd been letting people in earlier. What was happening? Kaladin glanced at Adolin, then gestured with his chin.
Check it out. We'll go have a look,
Adolin said, turning toward the others of their group.
Wait here.
Skarr and Drahi stopped, but Elokar followed as Kaladin and Adolin continued forward, and so did Shallan. Her servants hesitated briefly, then trailed after her. Storms, the command structure in this expedition was going to be a nightmare. Elokar imperiously marched forward and barked at people to move out of his way. Reluctantly, they did. A woman with his bearing was not someone to cross. Kaladin exchanged a wearied glance with Adolin, then both fell in beside the king.
"I demand entry,"
Elokar said, reaching the front of the crowd, which had swelled to some 50 or 60 people, with more steadily arriving. The small group of guards looked over Elokar, and their captain spoke.
"How many fighting men can you provide for the city defense?"
"None,"
Elokar snapped.
"They are my personal guard."
"Then, Brightness, you should march them personally onto the south and try another city."
"Where?"
Elokar demanded, the sentiment echoed by many in the crowd.
"There are monsters everywhere, Captain."
"Word is that there are fewer to the south," the soldier said, pointing. "Regardless, Kolinar is full to bursting. You won't find sanctuary here. Trust me. Move on. The city—"
"Who is your superior?"
Elokar cut in.
"I serve High Marshal Azure of the Wall Guard."
"High Marshal Azure? I've never heard of such a man. Do these people look like they can walk farther? I command you to let us enter the city."
"I'm under orders to only let a set number in each day," the guard said with a sigh.
Kaladin recognized that sense of exasperation. Elokar could bring it out in the most patient of guards.
"We've passed the limit. You'll need to wait until tomorrow."
People growled, and more anger spren appeared around them.
"It's not that we're callous," the guard captain called. "Will you just listen? The city is low on food, and we're running out of room in storm shelters. Every person we add strains our resources further. But the monsters are focused here. If you flee to the south, you can take refuge there, maybe even get to Yakaved."
"Unacceptable,"
Elokar said.
"You've gotten these inane orders from that Azure fellow. Who commands him?"
"The High Marshal has no commander."
"What?"
Elokar demanded.
"What of Queen Aesudan?"
The guard just shook his head.
"Look, are those two men yours?"
He pointed at Drahi and Skarr, still standing near the back of the crowd.
"They look like good soldiers. If you assign them to the wall guard, I'll give you immediate entry, and we'll see that you get a grain ration."
"Not that one, though," another guard said, nodding toward Kaladin. "He looks sick."
"Impossible,"
Elokar demanded.
"I need my guards with me at all times."
"Brightness," the captain said.
Storms, but Kaladin empathized with the poor man. Syl suddenly grew alert, zipping into the sky as a ribbon of light.
Kaladin immediately stopped paying attention to Elikar and the guards. He searched the sky until he saw figures flying toward the wall in a V formation. There were at least 20 Voidbringers, each trailing a plume of dark energy. Above, soldiers began to scream. The urgent call of drums followed, and the guard captain cursed in response. He and his men charged in through the open doors, then ran toward the nearest stairs leading up to the wall walk.
"In,"
Adolin said as other refugees surged forward. He grabbed the king and towed him inside. Kaladin fought against the press, refusing to be pushed into the city. He instead craned his neck to look upward, watching the Voidbringers hit the wall. Kaladin's angle at the base was terrible for making sense of the action directly above. A few men got tossed off the wall farther along. Kaladin took a step toward them, but before he could do anything, they crashed to the ground with strikingly loud impacts. Storms! He was shoved farther toward the city by the crowd, and barely restrained himself from drawing in stormlight.
"Steady," he told himself. "The point is to get in without being seen. You would ruin that by flying to the defense of the city."
But he was supposed to protect.
"Kaladin!"
Adolin called, fighting back through the crowd to where Kaladin stood right outside.
"Come on!"
"They're dominating that wall, Adolin. We should go help."
"Help how?" Adolin said.
He leaned in, speaking softly.
"Summon shard blades and swing them wildly in the air like a farmer chasing sky eels? This is merely a raid to test our defenses. It's not a full-on assault."
Kaladin drew in a breath, then let Adolin pull him into the city.
2 dozen of the fused. They could take this city with ease."
"Not alone," Adolin said. "Everyone knows that shardbearers can't hold ground. It should be the same for Radiance and those fused. You need soldiers to take a city. Let's move."
They went inside and met with the others, then moved away from the walls and gates. Kaladin tried to close his ears to the distant shots of the soldiers. As Adolin had guessed, the raid ended as abruptly as it had begun, the fused soaring away from the wall after only a few minutes of fighting. Kaladin sighed, watching them go, then steeled himself and followed with the rest as Adolin led them down a wide thoroughfare. Kolinar was both more impressive and more depressing from the inside. They passed endless side streets packed with tall 3-story homes built like stone boxes. And storms, the guard at the wall had not been exaggerating. People crowded every street. Kolinar didn't have many alleyways. The stone buildings were built right up against each other in long rows. But people sat in the gutters, clinging to blankets and meager possessions. Too many doors were closed. Often on nice days like this, people in the war camps would leave the thick storm doors and shutters open to the breeze. Not here. They were locked up tightly for fear of being overwhelmed by refugees. Shallan's soldiers pulled tight around her, hands carefully on their pockets. They seemed familiar with the underbelly of city life. Fortunately, she'd accepted Kaladin's pointed suggestion and hadn't brought Gaz.
"Where are the patrols?" Kaladin thought as they walked through curving streets, up and down slopes.
With all these people clogging the streets, surely they needed as many men as possible keeping the peace. He didn't see anything until they passed out of the section of city nearest the gates and entered a more wealthy area. This part was dominated by larger homes with grounds marked by iron fences anchored into the stone with hardened creme. Behind those were guards, but the streets were devoid of anything similar. Kaladin felt the gaze of the refugees, the wondering. Was it worth robbing him? Did it matter? Did they have food? Fortunately, the spears Skar and Drahi carried, along with the cudgels held by Shallan's 2 men, seemed enough to deter any would-be robbers. Kaladin quickened his pace to catch up to Adolin at the front of their little group.
"Is this safe house of yours close? I don't like the feeling on these streets."
"It's away yet," Adolin said. "But I agree. Storms, I should have brought a side sword. Who knew I'd be worried about summoning my blade?"
"Why can't shardbearers hold a city?" Kaladin asked.
"Basic military theory," Adolin said.
Shardbearers do a great job killing people, but what are they going to do against the population of an entire city? Murder everyone who disobeys? They'd get overwhelmed, shards or not. Those flying voidbringers will need to bring in the entire army to take the city. But first they'll test the walls, maybe weaken the defenses.
Kaladin nodded. He liked to think he knew a great deal about warfare, but the truth was he didn't have the training of a man like Adolin. He'd participated in wars, but he'd never run any. The farther they got from the walls, the better things seemed to be in the city. Fewer refugees, more sense of order. They passed a market that was actually open, and inside he finally spotted a policing force. A tight group of men wearing unfamiliar colors. This area would have looked nice under other circumstances. Ridges of shale bark along the street, manicured with a variety of colors. Some like plates, others like knobby branches reaching upward. Cultivated trees, which rarely pulled in their leaves, sprouted in front of many of the buildings, gripping the ground with thick roots that melted into the stone. Refugees huddled in family groups. Here the buildings were built in large square layouts, with windows facing inward and courtyards at the centers. People crowded into these, turning them into improvised shelters. Fortunately, Kaladin saw no obvious starvation, so the city's food stores hadn't given out yet.
"Did you see that?"
Shallan asked softly, joining him.
"What?"
Kaladin asked, looking over his shoulder.
"Performers in that market over there, dressed in very odd clothing."
Shallan frowned, pointing down an intersecting street as they passed.
"There's another one."
It was a man dressed all in white with strips of cloth that streamed and fluttered as he moved. Head down, he stood on a street corner, leaping back and forth from one position to another. When he looked up and met Kaladin's eyes, he was the first stranger that day who didn't immediately look away. Kaladin watched until a chul pulling a wagon of storm refuse blocked his view. Then, ahead of them, people started clearing the street.
"To the side!" Elikar said. "I'm curious about what this could be."
They joined the crowds pressed up against the buildings, Kaladin shoving his hands in his pack to protect the large number of spears he had tucked away in a black purse there. Soon, a strange procession came marching down the center of the street. These men and women were also dressed like performers, their clothes augmented with brightly colored strips of red, blue, or green fabric. They walked past, calling out nonsense phrases. Words Kaladin knew, but which didn't belong together.
"What in damnation is happening in this city?" Adolin muttered.
"This isn't normal,"
Kaladin whispered.
"We have buskers and street performers, but nothing like this. Storms. What are they?"
"Spren," Shallan whispered. "They're imitating Spren. Look, those are like flame spren, and the ones of white and blue with the flowing ribbons? Wind spren. Emotion spren, too. There's pain, that's fear, anticipation."
"So it's a parade,"
Kaladin said, frowning.
"But nobody is having any fun."
The heads of spectators bowed, and people murmured, or prayed. Nearby, an Alethi refugee, wrapped in rags and holding a sniveling baby in her arms, leaned against a building. A burst of exhaustion spren appeared above her like jets of dust rising in the air. Only these were bright red instead of the normal brown, and seemed distorted.
"This is wrong, wrong, wrong,"
Syl said from Kaladin's shoulder.
"Oh, oh, that spren is from him, Kaladin."
Shallan watched the rising, not-exhaustion spren with widening eyes. She took Adolin by the arm.
"Keep us moving," she hissed.
He started pushing through the crowd toward a corner where they could cut away from the strange procession. Kaladin grabbed the king by the arm while Drahi, Scar, and Shallan's two guards instinctively formed up around them. The king let Kaladin pull him away, and a good thing, too. Elikar had been fishing in his pocket, perhaps for a sphere to give the exhausted woman. Storms in the middle of the crowd.
Not far now,
Adolin said once they had breathing room on the side street.
Follow me.
He led them to a small archway where the buildings had been built around a shared courtyard garden. Of course, refugees had taken shelter there, many of them huddled in blanket tents that were still wet from the storm the day before. Lifespren bobbed among the plants. Adolin carefully wound his way through all the people to get to the door he wanted and then knocked. It was the back door facing the courtyard instead of the street. Was this a rich person's wine house, perhaps? It seemed more like a home, though. Adolin knocked again, looking worried. Kaladin stepped up beside him, then froze. On the door was a shiny steel plate with engraved numbers. In it, he could see his reflection.
Almighty above,
Kaladin said, poking at the scars and bulges on his face, some with open sores. Big teeth jutted from his mouth, and one eye was higher in his head than the other. His hair grew out in patches, and his nose was tiny.
What did you do to me, woman?
I've recently learned, Shallan said, that a good disguise can be memorable, so long as it makes you memorable for the wrong reason. You, Captain, have a way of sticking in people's heads, and I worried you would do so no matter what face you wore. So I enveloped it with something even more memorable.
I look like some kind of hideous spren.
Hey, Syl said.
The door finally opened, revealing a short, matronly Thalen woman in an apron and vest. Behind her stood a burly man with a white beard cut after the horn-eater style.
What? She said. Who are you?
Oh, Adolin said. Shallan, I'll need...
Shallan rubbed his face with a towel from her pack as if to remove makeup, covering the transformation as his face became his own again. Adolin grinned at the woman, and her jaw dropped.
Prince Adolin? She said. Hurry, hurry, get in here. It's not safe outside.
She ushered them in and quickly shut the door. Kaladin blinked at the spear-lit chamber, its walls lined with bolts of cloth and dummies with half-finished coats on them.
What is this place?
Kaladin asked.
Well, I figured we'd want someplace safe, Adolin said. We'd need to stay with someone I'd trust with my life or more.
He looked at Kaladin, then gestured toward the woman.
So I brought us to my tailor.
62. Research. I wish to submit my formal protest at the idea of abandoning the tower. This is an extreme step, taken brashly. From Drawer 222, Smokestone. Secrets. The city was brimming with them. It was stuffed with them so tightly they couldn't help but ooze out. The only thing for Shallan to do, then, was punch herself in the face. That was harder than it seemed. She always flinched. Come on, she thought, making a fist. With eyes squeezed shut, she braced herself, then smacked her free hand into the side of her head. It barely hurt. She simply wasn't capable of hitting herself hard enough. Maybe she could get Adolin to do it for her. He was in the back workroom of the tailor's shop. Shallan had excused herself to step into the front showroom, as she figured the others would react poorly to her trying to actively attract a painspren. She could hear their voices as they interrogated the polite tailor. It started with the riots, Your Majesty, the woman said in response to a question from Elokar. Or maybe before, with the... Well, it's complicated. Oh, I can't believe that you're here. I've had passion for something to happen true, but to finally... I mean... Take a deep breath, Yogska, Adolin said gently. Even his voice was adorable. Once you've taken all this in, we can continue. Secrets, Shallan thought. Secrets caused all of this. Shallan peeked into the other room. The king, Adolin, Yogska the tailor, and Kaladin sat inside, all wearing their own faces again. They'd sent Kaladin's men along with Red, Ishna, and Vatha off with the tailor's housemaid to prepare the upper rooms and attic to accommodate guests. Yokska and her husband would be sleeping on pallets in the back room here. Naturally, Elokar had been given their room. Right now, the small group had arranged a circle of wooden chairs under the heedless watch of tailor's dummies, wearing a variety of half-finished coats. Similar finished coats were displayed around the showroom. They were made in bright colors, even brighter than the Alethi wore at the Shattered Plains, with gold or silver thread, shiny buttons, and elaborate embroidery on the large pockets. The coats didn't close at the front except for a few buttons right below the collar, while the sides flared out, then split into tails at the back. "It was the execution of the ardent Bright Lord," Yokska said. "The queen had her hanged, and, oh, it was so gruesome. Blessed passion, your majesty. I don't want to speak ill of your wife. She must not have realized."
"Just tell us," Elokar said. "Do not fear reprisal. I must know what the city's people think."
Yokska trembled. She was a small, plump woman who wore her long Thalen eyebrows curled in twin ringlets and was probably very fashionable in that skirt and blouse. Shallan lingered in the doorway, curious as to what the tailor had to say.
"Well," Yokska continued, "during the riots, the queen basically vanished. We'd get proclamations from her now and then, but they often didn't make much sense. It all went wrong at the Ardent's death. The city was already in an uproar. She wrote such awful things, your majesty, about the state of the monarchy and the queen's faith, and—"
"And Aesudan condemned her to death," Elokar said.
Lit only by a few spheres at the center of their circle, his face was half-shadowed. It was a most intriguing effect, and Shallan took a memory for later sketching.
"Yes, your majesty.
It was the Dark Spren, obviously, who gave the actual order," Elokar said. "The Dark Spren that is controlling the palace. My wife would never be so imprudent as to publicly execute an Ardent during such parlous times."
"Oh, yes, of course. Dark Spren. In the palace."
Yokska sounded relieved to have a rationale for not blaming the queen. Shallan considered, then noticed a pair of fabric scissors on a ledge nearby. She snatched them, then ducked back into the showroom. She pulled her skirt to the side, then stabbed herself in the leg with the scissors. The sharp pain seared up her leg and through her body.
"Mmm," Pattern said. "Destruction. This is not normal for you, Shallan. Too far."
She trembled at the pain. Blood welled from the wound, but she pressed her hand against it to limit its spread. "There. That had done it." Pain spren appeared around her, as if crawling out of the ground, like little disembodied hands. They looked skinless, made of sinew. Normally they were bright orange, but these were a sickly green, and they were also wrong. Instead of human hands, these seemed to be from some kind of monster, too distorted, with claws jutting from the sinew. Shallan eagerly took a memory, still holding her Hava skirt up to keep it from the blood.
"Does that not hurt?"
Pattern asked, from where he'd moved onto the wall.
"Of course it does,"
Shallan said, her eyes watering. "That was the point."
"Mmm,"
he buzzed, worried. But he needn't have been, as Shallan had what she wanted. Satisfied, she took in a little stormlight and healed up, then used some cloth from her satchel to wipe the blood from her leg. She rinsed her hands and the cloth in the washroom basin. She was surprised at the running water. She hadn't thought Kolinar had such things. She took out her drawing pad and returned to the back room's doorway, where she leaned against the jamb, doing a quick sketch of the strange, twisted pain spren. Yasna would tell her to put down her sketch pad and go sit with the others, but Shallan often paid better attention with a sketch pad in her hands. People who didn't draw never seemed to understand that.
"Tell us about the palace," Kaladin said. "The Dark Spren, as His Majesty put it."
Yokska nodded. Oh, yes, Bright Lord. Shallan glanced up to catch Kaladin's reaction at being called Bright Lord, but he didn't show one. His illusory disguise was gone, though Shallan had tucked that sketch away for possible further use. He'd summoned his blade earlier in the morning, and he now had eyes as blue as any she'd seen. They hadn't faded yet.
There was that unexpected high storm, Yokska continued, and after that the weather went insane. The rain started going in fits and starts. But oh, when that new storm came, the one with the red lightning, it left a gloom over the palace. So nasty. Dark times. I suppose those haven't ended. Where were the royal guards? Elokar said. They should have augmented the watch, restored order during the rioting. The palace guard retreated into the palace, Your Majesty, Yokska said. And she ordered the city watch to barricade into the barracks. They eventually moved to the palace on the queen's orders. They haven't been seen since. Storms, Shallan thought, continuing her sketch. Oh, I guess I'm jumping about, but I forgot, Yokska continued. In the middle of the rioting, a proclamation came from the queen. Oh, Your Majesty. She wanted to execute the city's parshmen. Well, we all thought she must be. I'm sorry, but we thought she must be mad. Poor things. What have they ever done? That's what we thought. We didn't know. Well, the queen posted criers all over the city proclaiming the parshmen to be void-bringers. And I must say, about that she was right. Yet it was still so strange. She didn't even seem to notice that half the city was rioting.
The Dark Spren, Elokar said, making a fist. It must be blamed. Not Aesudan. Were there reports of any strange murders? Adolin asked. Murders or violence that came in pairs. A man would die and then a few days later someone else would be killed in the exact same way?
No, Bright Lord. Nothing like that. Though there were many who were killed.
Shallan shook her head. It was a different unmade here. Another ancient spren of odium. Religion and lore spoke of them vaguely at best, tending to simplistically conflate them into one evil entity. Navani and Yasna had begun to research them over the last weeks, but they still didn't know very much. She finished her sketch of the pain spren, then did one of the exhaustion spren they'd seen earlier. She'd managed to glimpse some hunger spren around a refugee on their way. Oddly, those didn't look any different. Why? Need more information, Shallan thought. More data. What was the most embarrassing thing she could think of?
Well, Elokar said, though we didn't order the parshmen executed, only exiled, at least that order seems to have reached Aesudan. She must have been free enough from the control of the dark forces to heed our words via spanreed.
Of course he didn't mention the logical problems. If the tailor was correct about the Dark Spren arriving during the Everstorm, then Aesudan had executed the Ardent on her own, as that had happened before. Likewise, the order to exile the parshmen would also have come before the Everstorm. And who knew if an unmade could even influence someone like the queen? The Spren in Urethiru had mimicked people, not controlled them. Yokska did seem to be a little scattered in her retelling of events, so maybe Elokar could be forgiven for mixing up the timeline. Either way, Shallan needed something embarrassing. When I spilled wine the first time Father gave me some at a dinner party. No, something more.
Oh, Yokska said. Your Majesty, you should know. The proclamation requiring the execution of the parshmen? Well, a coalition of important light eyes didn't follow it. Then after that terrible storm, the queen started giving other orders, so the Light Eyes went to meet with her.
Let me guess, Kaladin said. They never came back from the palace.
No, Bright Lord, they did not.
How about when I woke and faced Yasna after I'd almost died, and she'd discovered that I'd betrayed her? Surely remembering that event would be enough. No? Bother.
So the parshmen, Adolin said. Did they get executed?
No, Yokska continued. Like I said, everyone was concerned with the riots, save for the servants posting the Queen's orders, I suppose. The Wall Guard eventually took action. They restored some measure of order in the city, then rounded up the Parshmen and exiled them to the plain outside. And then the Everstorm came, Shallan said, covertly undoing the button on her safe-hand sleeve. Yokska seemed to shrink down in her seat. The others fell silent, which provided the perfect opportunity for Shallan. She took a deep breath, then strolled forward, holding her sketch pad as if distracted. She tripped herself over a roll of cloth on the floor, yelped, and tumbled into the center of the ring of chairs. She ended up sprawled on the floor, skirts up about her waist, and she wasn't even wearing the leggings today. Her safe hand bulged out from between the sleeve buttons, poking into the open right in front of not just the king, but Kaladin and Adolin. Perfectly, horribly, incredibly mortifying. She felt a deep blush come on, and shame spren dropped around her in a wave. Normally they took the shape of falling red and white flower petals. These were like pieces of broken glass. The men, of course, were more distracted by the position she'd gotten herself into. She squawked, managed to take a memory of the shame spren, and righted herself, blushing furiously and tucking her hand in her sleeve. That, she thought, might be the craziest thing you've ever done, which is saying a lot. She grabbed her sketchbook and bustled away, passing Yokska's white-bearded husband. Shallan still hadn't heard him speak a word, standing in the doorway with a tray of wine and tea. Shallan grabbed the darkest cup of wine and downed it in a single gulp, feeling the stares of the men on her back.
Shallan? Adolin piped up.
I'm fine, that was an experiment, she said, ducking into the showroom and throwing herself into a seat placed there for customers. Storms, that was humiliating. She could still see partway into the other room. Yokska's husband walked with his silver tray to the group. He stopped by Yokska, though serving the king first would have been the correct protocol, and rested a hand on her shoulder. She put her own on his. Shallan flipped open her sketch pad and was pleased to see more shame spren dropping around her. Still glass. She started a drawing, burying herself in it to keep from thinking about what she'd just done.
So, Elokar said in the next room, we were talking about the Wall Guard. They obeyed the Queen's orders?
Well, that was around the time that the High Marshal appeared. I've never seen him, either. He doesn't come down from the Wall much. He restored order, so that's good. But the Wall Guard doesn't have the numbers to police the city and watch the Wall, so they've taken to watching the Wall and mostly leaving us to just survive in here.
Who rules now?
Kaladin asked. Nobody, Yokska said. Various High Lords. Well, they basically seized sections of the city. Some argued that the monarchy had fallen, that the king, I beg pardon, your majesty, had abandoned them. But the real power in the city is in the Cult of Moments.
Shallan looked up from her drawing. Those people we saw on the street? Adolin asked. Dressed like spren?
Yes, your highness, Yokska said. I don't know what to tell you. Spren looks strange sometimes in the city, and people think it has to do with the queen, the weird storm, the Parshmen. They're scared. Some have started claiming they can see a new world coming, a truly strange new world. One ruled by spren. The Vorin Church has declared the Cult of Moments a heresy, but so many of the Ardents were in the palace when it grew dark. Most of those remaining took refuge with one of the High Lords who claimed small sections of Kolinar. Those are increasingly isolated, ruling their districts on their own. And then there are the Fabrials.
Fabrials.
Shallan scrambled to her feet and stuck her head into the next room. What about the Fabrials?
If you use a Fabrial, Yokska said,
of any sort, from Spanry to Warmer to Painrail, you'll draw them. Screaming yellow spren that ride the wind like streaks of terrible light. They shout and swirl about you. That then usually brings the creatures from the sky, the ones with the loose clothing and long spears. They seize the fabrial and sometimes kill the one trying to use it. Storms, Shallan thought.
Have you seen this? Kaladin asked. What did the spren look like? You heard them speak?
Shallan glanced at Yokska, who had sunk down farther in her seat. I think maybe we should give the good tailor a break, Shallan noted. We've shown up on her doorstep out of nowhere, stolen her bedroom, and are now interrogating her. I'm sure the world won't fall apart if we let her have a few minutes to drink her tea and recover. The woman looked at Shallan with an expression of pure gratitude.
Storms! Adolin said, leaping to his feet. Of course, you're right, Shallan. Yokska, forgive us, and thank you so much for...
No need for thanks, Your Highness, she said. Oh, I did have passion that help would come, and here it is. But if it pleases the king, a little rest? Yes, a little rest would be much appreciated.
Kaladin grunted and nodded, and Elokar waved a hand in a way that wasn't quite dismissive, more just self-absorbed. The three men left Yokska to rest and joined Shallan in the showroom, where light from the setting sun streamed between the drapes on the front windows. Those would normally be open to show off the tailor's creations, but no doubt they'd lately spent most of their time closed. The four gathered together to digest what they'd discovered.
Well?
Elokar asked, speaking, for once, in a soft, thoughtful tone.
I want to know what's going on with the Wall Guard, Kaladin said. Their leader. None of you have heard of him?
High Marshal Azure? Adolin asked.
No, but I've been away for years. There are bound to be many officers in the city who were promoted while the rest of us were at war.
Azure might be the one feeding the city, Kaladin said. Someone is providing grain. This place would have eaten itself to starvation without some source of food.
At least we've learned something, Shallan said. We know why the Spanreeds cut off.
The Voidbringers are trying to isolate the city, Elokar said. They locked down the palace to prevent anyone from using the Oath Gate, then cut off communication via Spanreeds. They're stalling until they can gather a large enough army.
Shallan shivered. She held up her sketch pad, showing them the drawings she'd done.
Something is wrong with the city's spren.
The men nodded as they saw her drawings, though only Kaladin seemed to catch what she'd been doing. He looked from the drawing of the shame spren to her hand, then raised an eyebrow at her. She shrugged.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
Prudence, the king said softly. We mustn't simply rush in and fall to whatever darkness seized the palace. But we also can't afford to be inactive.
He stood up straighter. Shallan had grown so accustomed to seeing Elokar as an afterthought, a fault of the way Dalinar increasingly had been treating him. But there was an earnest determination to him. And yes, even a regal bearing.
Yes, she thought, taking another memory of Elokar.
Yes, you are king, and you can live up to your father's legacy.
We must have a plan, Elokar said. I would gladly hear your wisdom on this matter, Windrunner. How should we approach this?
Honestly, I'm not sure we should. Your Majesty, it might be best to catch the next high storm, return to the tower, and report back to Dalinar. He can't reach us with his visions here. And one of the Unmade could very well be beyond our mission's parameters.
We don't need Dalinar's permission to act, Elokar said.
I didn't mean, what is my uncle going to do, Captain? Dalinar won't know any more than we will. We either do something about Kolinar ourselves now, or give the city, the Oathgate, and my family up to the enemy.
Shallan agreed, and even Kaladin nodded slowly.
We should at least scout the city and get a better feel for things, Adolin noted. Yes, Elokar said. A king needs accurate information to act correctly. Lightweaver, could you take on the look of a messenger woman?
Of course, Shallan said. Why?
Let us say I were to dictate a letter to Aesudan, the king said. Then seal it with the royal seal. You could act the part of a messenger who had come personally from the Shattered Plains, traveling through great hardship to reach the queen to deliver my words. You could present yourself at the palace and see how the guards there react.
That's not a bad idea, Kaladin said.
He sounded surprised.
It could be dangerous, Adolin said.
The guards might bring her into the palace itself.
I'm the only one here who has confronted one of the Unmade directly, Shallan said. I'm most likely to be able to spot their influence, and I have the resources to get out. I agree with His Majesty. Eventually, someone must go into the palace and see what is happening there. I promise to back off quickly if my gut says something is happening. Pattern said unexpectedly from her skirts. He generally preferred to remain silent when others were near.
I will watch and warn. We will be careful.
See if you can assess the state of the Oath Gate, the king said. Its platform is part of the palace complex, but there are ways up other than through the palace itself. The best thing for the city might be to go in quietly, activate it, and bring in reinforcements, then decide how to rescue my family. But do reconnaissance only for now.
And the rest of us just sit around tonight? Kaladin complained.
Waiting and trusting those whom you have empowered is the soul of kingship, Windrunner, Elokar said. But I suspect that Brightness Shallan would not object to your company, and I'd rather have someone watching to help get her out in an emergency.
He wasn't exactly correct. She would object to Kaladin's presence. Vale wouldn't want him looking over her shoulder, and Shallan wouldn't want him asking questions about that persona. However, she could find no reasonable objection.
I want to get a feel for the city, she said, looking to Kaladin. Have Yokska scribe the king's letter, then meet me. Adolin, is there a good spot we could find each other?
The grand steps up to the palace complex, maybe, he said. They're impossible to miss, and have a little square out in front of them.
Excellent, Shallan said. I'll be wearing a black hat, Kaladin. You can wear your own face, I suppose, now that we're past the wall guard. But that slave brand...
She reached up to create an illusion to make it vanish from his forehead.
He caught the hand.
No need. I'll keep my hair down over it.
It peeks out, she said.
Then let it. In a city full of refugees, nobody is going to care.
She rolled her eyes, but didn't push. He was probably right. In that uniform, he'd probably just be taken for a slave someone bought, then put in their house guard. Even though the Shash brand was odd. The king went to prepare his letter, and Adolin and Kaladin stayed in the showroom to talk quietly about the wall guard. Shallan headed up the steps. Her own room was a smaller one on the second floor. Inside were Red and Vatha, and Ishna, the assistant spy, chatting quietly.
How much did you eavesdrop on? Shallan asked them.
Not much, Vatha said, thumbing over his shoulder. We were too busy watching Ishna ransack the tailor's bedroom to see if she was hiding anything.
Tell me you didn't make a mess.
No mess, Ishna promised. And nothing to report, either. The woman might actually be as boring as she seems. The boys did learn some good search procedures, though.
Shallan walked past the small guest bed and looked out the window at a daunting view down a city street. So many homes. So many people. Intimidating. Fortunately, Vale wouldn't see it that way. There was only one problem.
I can't work with this team, she thought, without them eventually asking questions.
This Kolinar mission would bring it to a head, as Vale hadn't flown with them.
She'd been dreading this, and kind of anticipating it. I need to tell them, she whispered.
Pattern said.
It's good. Progress. Rather, she'd been backed into a corner. Still, it had to be done eventually. She walked to her pack and removed a white coat and a hat, which folded up on its side. "Some privacy, boys," she said to Vatha and Red. "Vale needs to get dressed." They looked from the coat to Shallan, then back. Red slapped the side of his head and laughed.
"You're kidding!" "Well, I feel like an idiot."
She'd expected Vatha to feel betrayed. Instead, he nodded, as if this made perfect sense. He saluted her with one finger, then the two men retreated. Ishna lingered. Shallan had, after some debate, decided to bring the woman. Moraes had vetted her, and in the end, Vale needed the training. "You don't look surprised about this," Shallan said as she started changing.
"I was suspicious when you told me to go on this mission," she said. "Then I saw the illusions and guessed."
She paused.
"I had it reversed. I thought Brightness Shallan was the persona. But the spy, that's the false identity."
"Wrong," Shallan said. "They're both equally false." Once dressed, she flipped through her sketchbook and found a drawing of Lynn in her scouting uniform. "Perfect. Go tell Bright Lord Kaladin I'm already out and exploring, and that he should meet me in about an hour." She climbed out the window and dropped one story to the ground, relying on her stormlight to keep her legs from breaking. Then she struck off down the street. 63. Within the Mirror. I returned to the tower to find squabbling children instead of proud knights. That's why I hate this place. I'm going to go chart the hidden undersea caverns of Aemia. Find my maps in Akina. From drawer 1616, Amethyst. Vale enjoyed being in a proper city again, even if it was half feral. Most cities lived on the very edge of civilization. Everyone talked about towns and villages out in the middle of nowhere as if they were uncivilized, but she'd found people in those places pleasant, even-tempered, and comfortable with their quieter way of life. Not in cities. Cities balanced on the edge of sustainability, always one step from starvation. When you pressed so many people together, their cultures, ideas, and stenches rubbed off on one another. The result wasn't civilization. It was contained chaos, pressurized, bottled up so it couldn't escape. There was a tension to cities. You could breathe it, feel it in every step. Vale loved it. Once a few streets from the tailor's shop, she pulled down the brim of her hat and held up a page from her sketchbook as if consulting a map. This covered her as she breathed out stormlight, transforming her features and hair to match those of Vale instead of Shallan. No Spren came, screaming to warn of what she'd done. So light weaving was different from using fabrials. She'd been fairly certain it was safe, as they'd worn disguises into the city, but she'd wanted to be away from the tailor's shop, in case. Vale strolled down the thoroughfare, long coat rippling around her calves. She decided immediately that she liked Kolinar. She liked how the city rolled across its hills, a lumpy blanket of buildings. She liked how it smelled of horn-eater spices in one gust of wind, then of alethy steamed crabs in the next. Admittedly, those probably weren't proper crabs today, but kremlings. That part she didn't like. These poor people. Even in this more affluent area, she could barely walk a quarter block without having to weave around huddles of people. The mid-block courtyards were clogged with what had probably been normal villagers not long ago, but who were now impoverished wretches. There wasn't much wheeled traffic on the streets. Some palanquins ringed by guards, no carriages. Life, however, did not stop for a war, or even for a second Ahariatium.
There was water to draw, clothes to clean. Women's work, mostly, as she could see from the large groups of men standing around. With no one really in charge in the city, who would pay men to work forges, to clean streets, or chip creme? Even worse, in a city this size, much of the menial labor would have been done by parchmen. Nobody would be eager to leap in to take their place. The bridge boy's right, though, Vale thought, loitering at an intersection. The city is still being fed. A place like Kolinar could consume itself quickly once the food or water ran out. No, cities were not civilized places. No more than a white spine was domesticated just because it had a collar around its neck. A small group of cultists, dressed as Rotspren, limped down the street, the wet red paint on their clothing evocative of blood. Shallan considered these people extreme and alarming, probably crazy, but Vale wasn't convinced. They were too theatrical, and there were too many of them, for all to be truly deranged. This was a fad, a way of dealing with unexpected events and giving some shape to lives that had been turned upside down. That didn't mean they weren't dangerous. A group of people all trying to impress one another was always more dangerous than the lone psychopath. So she gave the cultists a wide berth. Over the next hour, Vale surveyed the city while wending her way in the general direction of the palace. The area with the tailor's shop was the most normal. It had a good functioning market, which she intended to investigate further when not pressed for time. It had parks, and though these had been appropriated by the crowds, the people in them were lively. Family groups, even communities transplanted from outer villages, doing the best they could. She passed bunker-like mansions of the wealthy. Several had been ransacked, gates broken down, window shutters cracked, grounds draped with blankets or shanties. Some light-eyed families, it seemed, hadn't maintained enough guards to withstand the riots. Any time Vale's path took her closer to the city walls, she entered sections of the city that were the most cramped and the most despondent. Refugees just sitting on the streets, vacant eyes, ragged clothing, people without homes or community. The closer she drew to the palace, though, the emptier the city became. Even the unfortunates who populated the streets near the walls, where the void bringers were raiding, knew to stay away from this area. That made the homes of the wealthy here in the palace district seem out of place. In normal times, living close to the palace would have been a privilege, and every large compound here had private walls that sheltered delicate gardens and ostentatious windows. But now Vale felt the wrongness of the area as a prickling sensation on her skin. The families living here must have felt it, but they stubbornly remained in their mansions. She peeked through the iron gate of one such mansion and found soldiers on sentry duty, men in dark uniforms whose colors and heraldry she couldn't discern. In fact, when one glanced at her, she couldn't make out his eyes. It was probably just a trick of the light, but storms. The soldiers had a wrongness about them. They moved oddly, rushing in bursts, like prowling predators. They didn't stop to talk to each other as they passed. She backed away and continued down the street. The palace was right ahead. Straight on in front of it were the wide steps where she'd meet Kaladin, but she had some time left. She slipped into a park nearby, the first she'd seen in the city that wasn't clogged with refugees. Towering stump-weight trees, bred over time for height and spread of leaves, gave a shadowed canopy. Away from potential prying eyes, she used stormlight to overlay Vale's features and clothing with those of Lin. A stronger, more sturdy build, a blue scout's uniform. The hat became a black rain hat, of the type often worn during the weeping. She left the park as Vale, playing a part. She tried to keep this distinction sharp in her mind. She was still Vale, merely in disguise. now to see what she could find out about the Oath Gate. The palace was built on a rise overlooking the city, and she slipped through the streets to its eastern side, where she indeed found the Oath Gate platform. It was covered in buildings and was as high as the palace, maybe 20 feet up. It connected to the main palace by a covered walkway that rested atop a small wall. They built that walkway right over the ramp, she thought with displeasure. The only other paths up onto the platform were sets of steps cut into the rock, and those were guarded by people in Spren costumes. Vale watched from a safe distance. So the cult was involved in this somehow? Above on the platform, smoke trailed from a large fire, and Vale could hear sounds rising from that direction. Were those screams? The whole place was unnerving, and she shivered, then retreated. She found Kaladin leaning against the base of a statue in a square before the palace steps. Soul cast out of bronze, the statue depicted a figure in shard plate rising as if from waves. Hey, she said softly. It's me. Do you like the boots on this outfit? She raised her foot. Do we have to keep bringing that up? I was giving you a passcode, Bridge Boy, she said, to prove I'm who I say I am. Lynn's face made that clear, he said, handing her the king's letter inside a sealed envelope. I like him, Vale thought. An odd thought, in how much stronger that feeling was to Vale than it had been to Shallan. I like that brooding sense he has about him, those dangerous eyes. Why did Shallan focus so much on Adolin? He was nice, but also bland. You couldn't tease him without feeling bad. But Kaladin, he glared at you in the most satisfying of ways. The part of her that was still Shallan deep down was bothered by this line of thinking. So instead, Vale turned her attention to the palace. It was a grand structure, but more like a fortress than she'd pictured. Very Alethi. The bottom floor was a massive rectangle, with the short side facing toward the storm. The upper levels were successively thinner, and a dome rose from the center of the building.